So our gospel text from Luke, the 6th chapter, a commonly known text here. We hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Jesus teaches his disciples, "I say to you that listen, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you. And if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies. Love your enemies." The Gospel of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So a key word to unlock the doors to this text is clearly right at the beginning and at the end, and it's the word love, yes? Everybody uses the word love. Well, we too often use the word love almost as a throwaway word. It often really expresses likes than it does love. We love things, for instance. We love tacos. We love places. I love New York. They make banners and signs and bumper stickers. We love the Steelers. Love, though, you see, is a relational word. In the Bible, love is a word of intimacy. It's a word of bonding with other people or another person. There's a invisible connection, interaction. It's not a feeling word. It's love is a doing word. It's an action word. So to love someone means there has to be some type of confirming action behind that. It's not a feeling, and it certainly isn't a thing. You cannot love a thing because you can't have a relationship with a thing or a place. Love, yeah, love is used very casually in our culture. It's just throwaway. I love this, love that. But there's another key word here. Love your enemies. Oh, okay, enemies. Well, who's the enemy? What's the enemy? Is that somebody or somebody who's knocking down your door and invading your house? Something close, or is an enemy that there's some foreign adversary who's threatening to conquer us, or something in between? Who is the enemy? Is this an assailant? Is this an attacker? Is this an adversary? Is this an antagonist? Who is the enemy in our lives? We all have enemies. There's somebody or somebodies that evokes from us our deep ire, our white-hot anger, our desire to strike back, revenge. Right, so look, to be human, you feel that urge to retaliate. That goes with the package of being a human being. We hope not every day, not every moment, the rarer the better, but there are times, there are people who hit hot buttons and we want to strike back. Enemies can be all sorts of people. It might just be somebody who is a gossip about us, and you want to strangle that person. Maybe it's someone who backstabs you. Maybe it's somebody who undermines you. Maybe it's somebody who betrays you. That, in many ways, is the worst type of enemy. Because people who are opposed to you, you know, you expect they're not going to do me anything good. A betrayer is someone you trust, and then they... Oh, wow. Let me at that person. Love your enemies. Yeah, that's a nice little bromide. It's in the Bible. We put it on little samplers, little needle points, put them on the wall. It just sort of slides off the tongue, you know? You love your enemies. You read it, love your enemies. But what does it really mean to love your enemies? How do you love your enemies? There's a whole long laundry list of things in there about people who abuse you, people who persecute you, people who undermine you, people who steal from you, people who take things from you, and you're just supposed to love. Okay, well, there's another word in that text, but it's invisible. It's between the lines. Before you love an enemy, before you even think about trying to love an enemy, it's the word forgive. There's no way to love an enemy unless you have first forgiven your enemy. Oh, you have forgiven. No, they didn't apologize. They didn't ask for your forgiveness. They didn't bend on bended knee. Please, no, you forgave them. You took the initiative. Because that's the model for us, that God took the initiative toward us and forgave us first, right? Yeah, forgiveness. So what are we doing when we forgive? We're absolving people, exonerating people. We are excusing people. We are overlooking. We are holding no more malice. We're wiping the slate clean. It's all fresh, and we go tomorrow. There is no grudge. There are no bones in the background to dig up. It is, no, I have wiped the slate clean, and we move forward. Oh, you are a human being, and I would like you to love me and honor me and respect. I will love you, honor you, respect you. Wiping the slate clean, that's pretty hard to do, because we got memory, and we know what they did to us. How do you love your enemy? That's the big million-dollar question. How do you do it? And how do you do it in the name of Christ? It says at the top and at the bottom, love your enemies. That's the frame. That's the beginning. That's the end. That's the start. That's the conclusion. So there's no wiggling out of it. It is a command. It is an imperative. Love your enemies. Lots of work to figure out how to do that, though, right? Lots of work. Now, we're kind of in the middle of this text in Luke, loving enemies. So I assume that you've been trying to figure out how to love enemies. I don't know, so that's why there's no answer. But I can think of an example that helps to guide me, maybe it helps to guide you. So back in the late 90s, Bill Clinton was, in fact, it was 1998, so he was experiencing a whole lot of turmoil and turbulence with a lot of necessary and unnecessary harassment, some of his own making, but he was certainly living in turbulence, chaos, turmoil, an upside-down, topsy-turvy life. So we don't care about the politics. We're looking at human beings here. So he went to South Africa, the same place that Alicia said our Christmas boxes, the shoe boxes, went this past year. You may recall South Africa, 1950-60-70s, lived under the apartheid, yes, which is it's another form of slavery, but it's not called slavery, but you categorize people according to their skin, and then they get certain rights and privileges. And obviously, the darker your skin, the fewer rights and privileges. So Nelson Mandela, of course, becomes a symbol of that particular era. There were many other people, some who suffered and died. He was imprisoned, right? He was arrested and imprisoned for 27 years. 18 of those years were for hard labor. So when Clinton went, dealing with all this turmoil and probably he was definitely angry about maybe partly himself, yes, but a lot of other people who were very much politicizing things and harassing him and making his life very much unhappy, to say the least. A lot of anger, feeling there were a lot of enemies, wanting to strike back, retaliate. But, you know, what do you do with that? So he's in South Africa, and he's visiting, and Mandela took Bill Clinton to Robben Island. That's a little island a little bit off the coast of South Africa. Robben Island is basically a prison. It's kind of like an Alcatraz, if you will, a little island off in the San Francisco Bay. And this is where Mandela said, I spent 18 years. Here's the little cramped cell to which, in which I was confined for 18 years. Here's the rock quarry where I did 18 years of hard labor. Now, somehow or another, to make a long story short, you know, eventually wisdom prevailed, the spirit, okay, maybe the work of the spirit, but apartheid ended, and of all things, Nelson Mandela became the president of South Africa. Who would have ever mentioned that back in the 80s or the 70s? He invited to his inauguration his jailers. Clinton asked Mandela, he says, wow, he says, okay, that's kind of a magnificent thing, but didn't you, like, hate these people? Like, want to strike back, kill them? And Mandela, a man of compassion, yes, but also a man who's honest. You're doggone right I did. I hated those people. They stole everything from me. They took my family. I didn't get to see my kids grow up. They abused me mentally, physically, 18 years. They treated me less than a human being. Of course I hated them. Well, how did you get over that? How did you invite them to your inauguration to be people who would celebrate with you? How did you learn to love your enemies? Well, he says, Mandela, I realized one day as I was breaking the hard rock, these people have stolen everything from me. There's really nothing more they can do. Oh, yes, they have not stolen my mind. And most importantly, they didn't steal my heart. They have not stolen my heart, and I am not going to let them steal my heart. And neither should you. And neither should any of us. You don't let anyone ever steal your heart. You can forgive enemies, and you can love them in the name of Christ.
God, I'm breathing. Then I pray, don't take me soon, 'cause I'm here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday it'll all turn around, because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we don't want to fight no more. There'll be no more wars, and our children will play. One day, one day, one day. One day, one day, one day. It's not about win or lose, 'cause we all lose. One day, one day, one day. Children hurt and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach? Would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us. Send us guidance from above. Cause it got me out here questioning, where is the love?